Welcome to the Otolaryngology Mentor Podcast, which aims to provide mentorship for your otolaryngology career. I'm your host, Christina Cabrera-Muffley.
With a new co-host, Taylor Erickson.
All opinions expressed in this podcast are solely our own or our guests and do not express the views or opinions of any of our employers. Before we launch this first episode of season four, I wanted to introduce you to my new co-host and protege, Taylor Erickson. Taylor is a PGY3 otolaryngology resident at UCSF, who I met through resident interviews several years ago. We ran into each other at last year's 2023 SUO meeting, Society of University Otolaryngologists, for those who don't know the lingo, where she convinced me to resurrect this passion project. She has promised to help with all facets of the podcast despite her busy residency training schedule, so you'll be hearing her voice over the course of this season. Welcome to the team, Taylor.
Thank you, Dr. Cabrera-Muffley. I'm thrilled to be here. This podcast was incredibly important to me as I went through the residency application process, and so I'm absolutely excited to be a part of it and so grateful that you're letting me help out.
Today's episode is season four, episode one, how to select a residency program that is right for you. We have two guests today. One of them is actually Taylor Erickson, who I've just introduced you to. But let me tell you a little bit more about her. She graduated from the University of Michigan Medical School and plans to pursue a fellowship in rhinology and a career in academic medicine. In her free time, she enjoys running, skiing, and supporting her husband's startup adventures. Our other guest today is Sarah Clark. Sarah is a PGY3 resident at Wake Forest, and she graduated from Emory Medical School. She plans to pursue a career in general or comprehensive ENT, hopefully in a more rural area. In her free time, she enjoys all outdoor adventures, including hiking, canoeing, and camping, and spending time with her friends, family, and dog, Henry.
Welcome to the podcast.
Thank you. Excited to be here.
Let's start with you, Taylor. So tell me about your career path to otolaryngology, head and neck surgery.
So my career path to ENT was not totally straightforward. I actually started my clinical clerkships with surgery, thinking I should get it out of the way. My parents are both internal medicine doctors, and I would say never really pushed me to go into surgery, but it was my first rotation and I totally fell in love with it. I was a college athlete and I felt like it was very similar to playing sports. Everyone had a unique role between the scrub nurse, the attending surgeon, the resident, the anesthesiologist, but you all had to do it together to get your end goal, which was doing the surgery, doing what's best for the patient. And then doing surgery just felt like playing a sport. And the more times you practiced and thought about it and visualized, the better you got. So I really loved surgery. And then I thought about doing a surgery that in my mind was more friendly to possibly like a female applicant, which was OBGYN. But I did a sub-I and I found that it just wasn't for me for various reasons. And at that point, I was actually pretty late into my third year. And that was when COVID hit. And so I didn't have a lot of time to explore other specialties. So I honestly just talked to a lot of people about various different specialties, urology, plastic surgery, general surgery, otolaryngology. I listened to this podcast actually a lot and a lot of the interviewees and why they decided to go into otolaryngology. And basically everyone told me that I should really consider ENT. And once I talked to people who had done it, they were incredibly happy with their decision. And I felt like I really connected with all of those people. And then when I actually got to do my sub-I, I realized that the field is so diverse that it was kind of like delaying my decision. Like a day in laryngology was totally different than a day in otology, totally different than a day in head and neck. And I kind of figured it was a foolproof way of making the right decision because I could pick something I knew I would end up being happy with because I really liked all of the different parts of the field. So not totally straightforward, but really happy with where I ended up.
Yeah, I don't know that I've ever heard a completely straightforward answer to that question, but you're in good company. So Sarah, how about your career path to otolaryngology? Tell me about that.
Well, I think I can add to Taylor's story of less than straightforward paths to ENT. I was quite late to the game when it came to making my decision about what specialty I ultimately wanted to apply to. And up until the end of my third year, I was strongly considering rural family medicine. I had done ENT as one of the rotations as part of my third year surgery clerkship, and I really enjoyed it at the time, but kind of just pushed it into the back. And as I went on and did more of the family medicine rotations, I realized that some of the really long OR days in ENT, I was much more invigorated at the end of the day than I was after, you know, much shorter and less time intensive rotation with family medicine, and realized that, you know, even though maybe some of my interests and values aligned with that, it wasn't necessarily what my heart was leading me to. So I ended up signing up for the AI at my home institution, just like Taylor. You know, this is in the midst of COVID, so there was slightly limited options for getting additional exposure. But I ended up really loving it. And I realized as I sat down to think about the things that mattered to me, my values, interests, strengths, career goals, that ENT was really a great fit. I think it really combines a lot of different aspects of medicine. You get to be a surgeon. You also get to do clinic procedures. You can be a very good clinician. You treat the things that are acutely life-threatening, but you also can develop long-standing relationships with patients. And maybe it's things you're treating for quality of life, but you also treat things that are life-threatening with cancers and get to see little babies all the way up to older adults. And so putting all of that together, and then also realizing that the people I had met in ENT really seemed happy with their careers and also seemed like very well-adjusted people in their personal life as well. It just seemed like the right thing. And I had some great mentorship and have found all of those things to be true.
Great. Thank you. So today's episode is really about how do you figure out which program you want to go to and whether it feels right to you. So Sarah, in your opinion, what is the best way to research programs? I mean, now with the signaling, it's a little different for sure, but how did you do it when you were looking at programs?
Yeah, I think it's intimidating because although there's a finite number of ENT programs, it's still a lot. And there's really no reason for you, a person, to have exposure to a lot of them until this process. So I personally started with sort of geographic regions. I have my family and my husband's family are in the Midwest. My husband was going to be staying in the Southeast at the time. And so that for me narrowed things down in kind of a nice way. And then I spent a lot of time exploring programs' websites. I feel like those can be just good for the basic information to help try to stratify programs. And then I also talked with a lot of people, relied on word of mouth, spent some time scrolling through residencies, social media sites, which, you know, wasn't a make or break, but I thought did give some more personal insight into some of the programs. And then I know some of the virtual info sessions are sort of phasing out as more things are going back to in-person, but I did attend those and I found it quite helpful. Although in hindsight, I think I may have focused a little less on that before interviews came out, just because you can spend an unlimited number of time researching programs that you don't even get an interview at. And then the one thing that I did really find helpful that I think hopefully is still out there is the AMC Careers in Medicine Residency Program Evaluation Guide, because it allowed me to sort of, I don't know, keep sort of an organized list, because it's a long process. And as I went through, I was able to keep track of things and easily reference them later without having to spend time sifting back through websites and things like that.
Great. How about you, Taylor? Did you have a pretty similar experience?
Yeah, I would say I had a very similar experience. I definitely started geographically first. And then I also kind of started with programs that had like four or five residents. Those were, I knew I probably wanted to be at a bigger program with more residents. So I generally started with programs with at least three residents per year. And that's where I had kind of my first list. And then I would say because of COVID, one of the nice things that came out of it is programs made a really concerted effort to increase their program information on the websites. So there's a lot of information you can find out about programs on their website. And I really encourage applicants to go to their websites and find out those questions that you can answer on the website. Don't necessarily need to ask an attending there or a resident there, because it's all publicly available. And I think for programs you're very serious about, really researching those, especially if you get an interview there before your interview, is really helpful. And the only thing I'll add to Sarah's comments is that I was very forward about, honestly, I just asked the current residents at my program, you know, did they do away rotations at other programs, or do they know residents at other programs? I was at University of Michigan for medical school, and the residents there are awesome. And they were really, really helpful in telling me about their experiences and connecting me with other residents that they knew at other programs that they knew I was interested in. And then those residents were really, really nice to get on the phone with me and spend a lot of time talking through their program and what they thought the differences were between, you know, their program and the one program I had experienced, which was my home institution. So now it's something I try to make an effort to do with applicants is get on the phone with them. It might be on a weekend, it might be after a case, but really talk through all of different programs they're interviewing at and what I may know about those, which could be totally the truth or not, but it's what my experience has been or other residents' experiences have been. So I really think that word of mouth and talking to residents can be really helpful if they're willing to give you that time.
Yeah. So you guys were the year that there were no away rotations, correct? Yeah. Okay. So now that you're on the other side of that and you have had away rotators come back, do you feel like those rotations are helpful in making decisions now that they're able to do that again?
Yeah, I think they're incredibly helpful. I think they're really hard for sub eyes. Like, it truly is a month-long interview. And it's a huge financial consideration. It's a huge time consideration. But if you're very serious about a program and it's where you're going to spend the next 5 years of your training, maybe 7 years of your training, then I think it's definitely worth it. And it's really where you get to understand the nitty-gritty of a program, what being a resident there is like. Now, you don't understand everything because you're not an actual resident yet, and you're only there for a month. You might only see one clinical site if they have five. But I really think that's probably the best way to learn what it's like to be a resident at that particular program. I know we'll probably get into this a little bit later, but I would really encourage applicants who are trying to decide about big differences in a program. For example, if they have one clinical site versus if they have five clinical sites all around a city, or if they're in a small town in the Midwest versus a big metropolitan city, to do an away rotation at both, really just to get the experience and see what that's like, because you can try, it's hard, but you can try to generalize that experience to other programs and what it might be like. So money and time permitting, I really would encourage applicants to do them because I think they're quite helpful.
Any other thoughts about that, Sarah?
Yeah, I agree with everything Taylor said. You know, it's hard because we didn't get to do them individually, but I will say, I only had one perspective on what an ENT program department looks like. And I was lucky. I had a really great home program, but it's still just one perspective. And there's a huge range in sort of program priorities. Everybody trains good surgeons, but, you know, outside of kind of hitting the basic check marks, each one has their own strengths. And even if you don't end up liking the program that you do an away at or an AI at, I think it at least helps give you ideas of questions that are important to you, things to ask that you might not realize are different than where you are at your home program. And, you know, I will also encourage people, it is a huge time and money investment. And I think, you know, Taylor and I could probably say that even if you don't have the opportunity to do them, you can still find a good fit. If you can't do it, it might be worth talking with other students in your class, or as Taylor said, residents that have gone on to try to help figure out. And even if it's not about a specific program, but just figuring out what questions should you ask to try to gain more than that one perspective that you have at your own home program.
Yeah. Taylor, you alluded to this somewhat, but it sounds like there's definitely some key factors that you want to consider, right? So geographic area, size of the program, number of sites. What are the other things that you would say are key factors, Sarah, that really you thought about when you were thinking about programs?
Yeah, I will say, I think a few of the things looking back at sort of my chicken scratch of trying to figure out my rank list was sort of the obvious things that you mentioned, but then also looking at faculty profiles. So outside of just looking at the number of residents per year, you know, fewer faculty, there are advantages of that. Like, you develop closer relationships, they get to know you in the OR and clinic faster. But with a larger faculty, you have more exposure to different practice patterns and things like that. And really, I think they're both great. It's just what matters more to you or what you might find the most helpful. I personally looked into patient population as well. So I wanted to find a program that served the population that I was hoping to serve. And also looking at different disease patterns. We are in a very heavily smoking area of the country. And so knowing that my exposure to cancer and things like that was going to be different here than maybe in a different geographical location. And then I also looked at not only where the current resident, what the current residents were interested in, but also where their graduates had gone. And that's easier to find for some places than others, but I found to be a good question to ask in the interviews if it wasn't publicly available, because I think that can also be telling of, you know, if you have an idea in mind of what you might want to do, and a lot of the recent grads have been doing that, you know, the chances are that they're going to be very good at getting you to that career goal. And then I think the last thing is just kind of every program, everybody has to check the boxes to be a, you know, a good surgeon when they leave. But I think there are still different focuses within the program. So there are some programs that do a lot of research. I personally chose one that was more clinically focused because that was where I saw myself going. And so trying to figure out, you know, what is the mission outside of getting everybody to the point of being a good surgeon at the end of it? What are the things that fall into priority after that?
Yeah. Any other factors, Taylor, that weren't mentioned?
No, I think those are all excellent. A lot of those I was going to say. I think one of the biggest things is the amount of clinical sites. So, you know, I went to a medical school with one clinical site in a VA that's quite close. And then the residency program I am at has, you know, five clinical training sites that are scattered throughout the city. And just the experience you have is really different. You know, in my opinion, I think that I will be really, really well trained because I've seen so many different sites and so many different patient populations and just experienced, you know, so much of San Francisco across all of the clinical sites. But I do think it adds an additional layer of difficulty to residency to have to, you know, it's kind of like every time you're at a new site, you kind of have to relearn all of the things unique to that site as opposed to just having one hospital. And so I think it is something to certainly consider. And I oftentimes, you know, programs in larger cities do have multiple sites. So I think that one is really important and you really have to figure out, you know, what you want for yourself. And then as Sarah said, I think another thing that's really important and one thing I really wanted was a place that gave me opportunity. So, you know, looking at where their previous residents went and what kind of fellowships they were doing, or if they're going into private practice, and really a place that was A, going to give me opportunity to do whatever I wanted to do after, whether that was pursuing a fellowship at a large academic institution or, you know, going into private practice, and then a place that supported me in my decision to do either of those. And, you know, I do foresee a career for myself in academics. And I wanted to have a place that was going to support me in that, but also going to support me if something changed and that wasn't going to be the path for me anymore. So I think that that's also really important. And the last thing that I think is really hard for applicants to get a good sense of, but is really important, is the relationship, A, amongst the residents, but also between the residents and the faculty members. You know, for example, a week after my wedding, I received a gift from one of my Peds faculty, and I didn't even know she knew I was getting married, nor did I know how she got my address, but she sent me champagne flutes and a really nice card. And it's like those kind of little things of those relationships between your attendings and the residents that, you know, you work with them, you work sometimes for them, but you're also in some sense friends with them. And it might be a little thing like, are all of your communications sent via email, or do you have the personal phone number of the majority of your faculty? And I think that might vary across programs. And I knew I wanted to be at a program that had a little bit of a kind of closer relationship between the residents and the faculty member, you know, still like a hierarchy and still a lot of respect there, but that I felt really comfortable with them, you know, both inside and outside of the operating room in the clinic.
So you guys were also in the completely virtual interview sphere. What did you think about the interview and how much it affected your decision making and how much it affected your ranking of programs?
Yeah, I think it is hard because we did do everything virtual. And there were little things, you know, a lot of times like in the resident rooms that I noticed, like the way residents would talk to each other or about each other. And I noticed like small things about like, some programs, you know, some of the residents knew everything about their co-residents. They knew like where they went to college, where they went to medical school, if they had a partner, if they had dogs, where they were from. And some really didn't know that much about their co-residents. It was kind of purely a working relationship. And you can tell by small comments that people make what those relationships are like. Same with the residents and the faculty. And so I think for a lot of those kind of intangibles of what the culture is like, you do get from the interviews. You can't read that on a website. So for some of those like non just like metrics of where do people go to fellowship and how many publications do residents have a year and, you know, what's the call schedule like? Those little things that if they're important to you, which I imagine to most applicants they are where you you find those things on the interview. So even virtually, I think you can find those. And I certainly would say virtual interviews did kind of reorder my rank list from what I originally thought it was going to be.
How about you, Sarah?
Yeah, I think I honestly don't have a ton of add because I feel like it affected my rank list very similarly. You know, it's easy to go through sort of the objective pros and cons of programs with just the data. But until you start to see the culture of the program and if it's a good fit for you, I think it's hard to really feel good about your rank list. And I feel like the interview is where that came in. So, you know, I had kind of a general sense of where things fell on my list, you know, maybe into three tiers or something like that. And I felt like the interview and just how I felt after leaving the interview day, despite being virtual, was really a large factor in sort of separating out those places that otherwise looked fairly similar, had, you know, very similar pros and cons on paper. And the interesting part is, you know, different cultures are good for different people. So just because somebody that you know speaks really highly of a program doesn't mean that it's a place that you would fit in as well or vice versa. And so I think it's really important to use that time and space to ask questions that will help you get to that underlying, you know, kind of fit with the program because it's different for everybody. And that's kind of the beauty of it is there's going to be a spot that is a good fit for every single person, but it's going to be different depending on your personality and interests and all of that.
So Sarah, what are the factors that really led you to want to come to your residency program?
Yeah, there are a lot. I think part of it is just realizing that, you know, 5 years is a long time. And for most people going into ENT, it's, you know, in your 20s and 30s. And so I think it's important to find a place where you'll get the training that will allow you to reach your career goals, but is also a place where you'll be happy. And I think it's important to remember that also goals will change over time. And so it's good to think about, yes, what are your interests and priorities at this moment, but also is it a place where you think that you'd be able to explore that and still be successful? And so kind of getting back to the last question too, I think really culture was it for me. I felt like I left the interview day where I'm currently at and just like, wow, I think that's it. And, you know, there were things that I liked better about other programs, but again, just getting back to that, 5 years is a long time and there's a lot of reasons to be tired and burned out. And I think that you will succeed more at a place where you feel like you're happy with your working relationships and with kind of the day-to-day, even if maybe on paper another place is a better fit. And I don't know, a few things for me, like I, you know, sounds like Taylor wanted a slightly larger program. I was a little bit more interested in mid-size. Again, I'm interested in general ENT and hopefully working in a more rural area. And so for me, that kind of made sense. And also the priority on clinical practice. So of course I want to be, you know, adequate at research and reading the literature and all of that. But really in residency, I wanted to leave feeling like a very competent clinician and knowing that I likely didn't want to do fellowship. I wanted to feel like I could do what I wanted to do just with the 5 years of residency. And then I kind of went the opposite of Taylor as far as number of locations. So where I went to medical school, we had, you know, several different sites and I would notice, you know, you'd spend a lot of time with a couple of residents at a time, but then you might not see everybody else for a long time. And where I'm currently at, we see each other every day. We run our entire patient list before the OR at breakfast every single day. And that was something that really mattered to me and I think has really shaped my experience. And again, that might be something that you pick up in an interview, kind of going back to the last question, but really mattered to me.
How about you, Taylor? What are the specific things that you were looking for? I mean, you mentioned some of them already.
Yeah, I think to Sarah's point, you know, I was a little worried actually about the multiple sites and how you know, you would get close with residents, that there wasn't like one centralized team room, or you were just at so many different sites. And I never really thought about how close I would get with the residents I was on a team with at specific sites. So there might only be two of you or three of you or four of you. And that actually, in some senses, breeds like a certain additional layer of closeness. And a lot of times that's not just within your class, but inter classes. So I, you know, as a PGY1, I was incredibly close with one of my chiefs as an intern who's now a faculty member somewhere. And I talk to her all the time. And so, you know, I think it's just a kind of it's a different experience, but it was something that I was, you know, worried about with multiple sites. But then now that I'm a resident here and experience it, I'm like, oh, wow, that actually is something I shouldn't have been worried about at all. It's just different. But yeah, I think the similar things to what I had talked about before, really a program that I was going to have the opportunity to kind of pursue any fellowship that I wanted to, really become whatever I wanted to within otolaryngology, and also a place that had a culture that was going to support me when there were really good days, but also when there were really bad days, and a place that I knew I was going to have the backing from my attendings and my residents. And I really felt like that was where I ended up when I was on my interview. The last thing I'll say is, a lot of times it's a family or a partner decision that you have to make together. And I think it's totally appropriate, because a lot of times your partner, if they're not in medicine or if they are in medicine, has made just as many sacrifices for you as you have made to be a doctor. And I think it's totally respectable to appreciate their point of view and make a decision together. It doesn't mean you need to make a decision for them, but picking a place where you and your partner are going to be happy together, or you and your family are going to be happy together, is incredibly important. And if you can find a sweet spot where that's also a place that you can thrive as a resident, which just so happened to happen for me, where my partner was really wanting to be in the Bay Area or in a large city, and we were able to kind of both thrive in that area, was kind of perfect. And so don't you think you should have shame in picking a place that is good for you and the people that you love?
Yeah, I mean, I'll speak to that a little bit. My husband and I met in medical school, and one of us has followed the other, switching people each time all over the country, and that makes a huge difference in your happiness. And there's always like the leading person, and a lot of times that's very hard to do with the match, just because it's very tricky. But later on, maybe when you're choosing a job, you can change that lead person if they're not also a medical student. So I wanted to ask if anything has surprised you as far as, you know, getting to the program, things that just you didn't anticipate when you were looking and comparing things.
Honestly, I don't really think there was a ton that came as a surprise. I think, and maybe that's because the whole thing was fairly unknown from the get-go. And so maybe in reality, it was all kind of a surprise. But I think looking back, it's just realizing that there's probably a lot of places where you would do well at and you would fit in at. And of course, you kind of comb through things, look at all the details, and you come up with this rank list. But ultimately, you know, if you ranked at your first or you ranked at your 10th, there is a chance that both would be equally good fits. And at the end of the day, you don't really know any different than the experience of the place where you end up at. And so I think just going in with the goal of making the most of wherever you end up, even if it's at a different spot on your rank list than you might hope for, I think it's just really important. But I don't really know there was a ton that surprised me. Again, maybe just because the whole thing was just unknown. You hopefully kind of go through this discerning process one time, and you know, people can help give you their experiences, but each person kind of has their own journey.
Yeah, I would totally agree with that. There's a lot that you can stress out about as a fourth year medical student, and it's totally normal, and everyone does it. And so even, you know, when you're ranking a program or when you're interviewing at a program, you know, for example, in my home program, I was pretty stressed about having multiple sites throughout the city and how I was going to get around to all of those sites. You know, I don't love driving, and I don't love driving in a city. And now I bike everywhere. I bike to all of our clinical sites, except for the one that's across the bridge in Oakland. I have an e-bike, and it's my favorite part of the day. And that totally surprised me. It was something I was the most stressed out about is how I was going to get around. And then I got an e-bike, and it's one of the best parts of exploring the city is going around to all of our clinical sites. And my co-residents think I'm totally crazy. But even when we're on call over the weekend at multiple hospitals, I will bike instead of drive because I just like a sunny San Francisco day getting to bike through the city and I'm on call. That's incredible. So yeah, I think that that is one thing that's surprised me is just how much you can stress over the little details. And in the end, you end up figuring them out. And so I want to normalize the stressful part of applying to residency in otolaryngology, how competitive it is. But sometimes those little details are just not worth stressing over.
Yeah. So at the end of the day, it sounds like both of you are pretty happy with your choices in this very stressful time of your life. Anything that you would add about that, about being happy with your choices or anything that you would have done differently?
Just not stressing about the little things and knowing that the match, as crazy as it is, it has been in place for so many years and it has a way of working out for the majority of people. And it, you kind of end up where you were supposed to be, or maybe that's something that we tell ourselves in the end, but it really does, you know, make you feel better. And I think that there's so much space to worry about where you're going to end up, what you're going to do when you get there, what it's going to look like. And at the end of the day, speaking mainly to the like fourth or third year medical students, just enjoy the process because it goes by incredibly fast. And I can't believe I'm already halfway through residency. And so I think just have faith in the process of applying to residency and the match. Don't be afraid to reach out to people and ask about their programs and what it's like to be a resident there. And for residents, please pay it forward to medical students and for all the people that were willing to talk to you about their specific programs. So yeah, I think just trust the process. It's going to be okay. There will be bumps along the way, but in the end, it all works out.
Anything you want to add, Sarah?
I wholeheartedly agree with all of that. I am very happy with my choice, both with deciding on ENT and the program where I ended up. And I think so much of residency in general, even talking with my friends in other specialties, is about your attitude. And so, you know, even if it's your dream program, you're going to show up and there are going to be things that are different than what you might have expected. Or even if it's the last program on your list, you know, I think just refocusing on taking the good parts for what they are and for understanding that there are going to be things that you have to work through. It might not be patient care. It might be other, I don't know, kind of bumps in the road, as Taylor said, but just trying to focus on the fact that this is hard. It's a hard 5 years, but I think if you focus on the positives, really, I think it allows you to be happy wherever you end up. And it's also just understanding that the relationships that you build are really important. And I think that starts intern year. And even if that's, you know, maybe that's with your ENT co-residents, but that can also be with other residents in the hospital or nursing staff or OR staff. I think, you know, one of the things that I love about now being halfway through residency is I've built relationships with all of those people and it makes work really fun. Like I look forward to going to work. And even if it's, you know, a case I'm less excited about or something like that, if I'm in the OR with one of the scrub nurses that I love, it just adds a whole different tune to the day. And so I really think it's a lot about attitude. You can do everything that you can to prepare, but ultimately a lot of things are out of your control. And once you kind of accept that component, I think it allows you to make the most of everything.
For sure. Yeah. So longtime listeners of the podcast have heard me ask this before. So I'll ask each of you. So Sarah, let's say you have a kid at some point and they come to you and they say, you know, mom, I want to be an otolaryngologist. What would you tell them? What advice would you give?
Yeah, I think that's tough because in reality, that's many years down the road for me. And so, and medicine is an ever-changing environment. I mean, I hear this even from our, you know, fairly even newer attendings, just how different training is, the sort of hospital environment is than before. And so I think I would just encourage them, you know, it takes a lot of sacrifice to do this career, both in training, but then also afterward. And so if it's something that they loved and were really passionate about, I would absolutely tell them to go for it. But I'd want to make sure it was for the right reasons, because I think those sacrifices become really challenging if they're And right reasons is hard. I don't know how to define that, but if it's not for the right reasons. And I think one thing that's really great about ENT and something I kind of alluded to before is just the different practice patterns are incredible. Like, it is a surgical subspecialty, and yet there are so many things that you can do within it. And whether that's fellowship or, you know, focusing on leadership opportunities, quality improvement, research, you know, you are a leader wherever you end up, just inherently by being a physician and by being a surgeon. And that comes with a lot of, yes, responsibility, but also a lot of really cool opportunities. So it's hard to know. It's a, you know, kind of long way down the road, and healthcare is always changing, but I would absolutely encourage them if it's something that they're interested in.
How about you, Taylor? What do you think?
Yeah, you said it perfectly. I think I would expose them to everything and let them see what all different kinds of careers are like, whatever they wanted to go into, finance, tech, medicine. But if their heart was truly set on medicine, first of all, I'd be kind of complimented because they saw me do it and they still want to do it. But I would 100% want them to do ENT. Even though my parents are internal medicine doctors, I would definitely want them to do ENT. I think it's such a unique field. I really don't think there's a better subspecialty or specialty that is out there. And I think if they were willing to get through the really hard years of medical school and residency, but also find some joy in the process, and then have a career as fulfilling as being an otolaryngologist or frankly, even a doctor, I think that'd be quite special for them. And I also think it'd be quite special to share it with them. So yeah, I would absolutely encourage them.
My dad's an OBGYN, and I think he was very excited when I pivoted to otolaryngology. So there's that. All right. Well, thanks so much for being on the podcast. This will launch our season 4, and just great to talk to both of you. Anything else? Any final words?
No, thank you for having us.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me.
Thanks a lot. Thanks for listening. We would love to hear your comments about the podcast. Please check out the show notes page for a link to our feedback survey.